Hello, it's Aaron Wren, and welcome back to the show. Very delighted to have a special guest today, Dr. Paul Carice. He's a professor at Arizona State University, and he was the founding director of the School of Civic and Economic Thought and Leadership. And the acronym for that is pronounced SKETL, which I think is a great acronym. And SKETL is actually a great and innovative program that's really becoming a national model that's being implemented in other states. And so we're going to be hearing about programs like SKETL and wanted to introduce it to you and what's going on in the university, which I think is a very positive trend in the university. So thank you so much for joining me today, Dr. Carice.
Thank you, Aaron, for having me.
First, can you give people a little bit of an overview of what SKETL is?
SKETL, as you just described it, it turns out to be the first of a first department in a reform movement in American higher education, especially in public universities, to reestablish space for a traditional American civic education at the higher education level in the way appropriate to thinking about citizenship and the rights and duties of citizenship, being a self-governing person, appropriate to a higher education space. So more debate, more Socratic argument, more discourse than there might be in K-12 schools, even in the high school phase of K-12. So we were established as a department by the Arizona legislature and governor in 2016, a funded mandate from state government at ASU, Arizona State University, to be a department. And I'd been a professor about 25 years at that point in different institutions of American higher education. I'd never heard of such a thing. I was a civilian professor at the U.S. Air Force Academy, mm-hmm. teaching in political science, when a dean at ASU in the Phoenix area contacted me and said, we need to start this new department with this big, long name, School of Civic and Economic Thought and Leadership. And we heard that you had established an honors program for the cadets up at the Air Force Academy that was basically a leadership liberal arts honors education program. And so that's how I first got involved and became the founding director. And then, as your introduction mentioned, it's now a national reform movement. So the short version of it is that seven other states, a total of eight states, have either mandated to a public university or have separately funded a department or a center or even a college at a public university in this general realm of civic thought and leadership.
It strikes me as very unusual that the legislature would create a school at a university. You occasionally hear about something like a medical school or something that's viewed as purely economic more than academic. How did this come about, and was there a sort of a political angle to it?
You're right, it is unusual now, but one of the things I've learned, and I've learned a lot about this since becoming the director, I thought I knew quite a bit about American civic education being at the Air Force Academy for almost two decades, teaching basically a civic education about American constitutional and civic principles to new officers. But what I've learned in the past 7 years is much more about how this element of a liberal arts and college education used to be central from Harvard in the 17th century onward. And it was a main founding rationale for the first state universities in the country. So, for example, in 1789, when the North Carolina legislature says we will have a state university, the first of them, it cites as a main rationale the need to prepare the rising generation for their social duties, which clearly meant leadership in a self-governing society. And then the motto for what became UNC Chapel Hill is light and liberty. So light, we've all seen that. Looks are light. We've seen that in mottos of private and public
right. universities.
Light and liberty. Hmm. So that sets the... So many of us who study American political social thought would know more about the University of Virginia, the prominent role of Jefferson right. and Madison in establishing the University of Virginia. But it actually starts before that, 1790 North Carolina, and then it goes well beyond University of Virginia to say that education for the new generation of leaders in the American civic political order at the state level and for the national and federal level. That is a main reason to establish this state university. So Ohio State, in the middle of the 19th century, has a Latin motto that explicitly addresses civic education with those words as the rationale, the reason for Ohio State. Toward the end of the 19th century, University of Texas, Austin has a phrase that is, it's roughly, education is the guardian of the civic community, the guardian of democracy, right? So it's now unusual. We think in 2016, I thought it was unusual. You're saying it's unusual. That's right. For a state legislature to really care about civic education as a core mission of a public university. But that's a great forgetting that we've undertaken across most of the 20th century. And to follow up on your point, you know, it was controversial, right? If state legislatures care in a very specific way about public universities, it's an economic development program. It's an engineering, medical research, something like that, right? Here's a department mandated and funded to address civic and economic thought and leadership, right? I mean, this is incredibly contentious right now. And yet, seven other states adopting it, a total of 13 public university campuses having these either separately mandated and established or separately funded department centers, colleges. Well, the Arizona legislature was onto something. And Governor Ducey, they were onto something. And so I'll just finish with this. It was the two things. The awareness of a civic crisis in our culture, in our political culture. This is mid-2016, before Donald Trump is elected president, and many people on the center and the left parts of our political spectrum go crazy about Donald Trump, right? That election is itself a crisis, right? This is before that. The state legislature saying there's a civic political crisis and our state legislatures ought to be teaching more about these topics to address this. And then, to be candid, it was Republicans in the state legislature and a Republican governor saying the state universities, ASU's approach to these civic, political, social topics is extraordinarily one-sided, lopsided toward the left side of the spectrum. And we need more space for some more traditional, not partisan and ideological, but some more traditional approaches to teaching about American civic and constitutional thought, where do free markets come from? What do we mean by leadership, right? Mm-hmm. So that was it was controversial, but it turns out to have had a pretty good rationale to it.
So a Republican legislature and governor pass a law to create this department at the university. How is it that the university's leadership decided to embrace this, and it seems like they actually set up a school that reflects the mission that was chartered from the legislature? That to me is the amazing thing, because usually if state governments, particularly Republican governments, want to do anything in the university, there's fierce resistance. I mean, if anything has a deep state, it's a university, you know, which has this, you know, historical self-governing kind of ethos to it. And they could have just turned this into, you know, another ideologically driven department, presumably, sure, if they true. What made them decide to get on board with this?
It's a great question, Aaron. So I'm going to mention two people by name, and I'll mention a phrase that I learned when I was at the Air Force Academy, right? It's part of the federal government. It's part of the Department of the Air Force, Department of Defense, largest bureaucracy in the world, right? But the phrase is personnel is policy. Mm. It's important to have the right policies, but it's crucial who the leaders are implementing and adapting any given policy or strategy. So I want to give credit to two people, the president of Arizona State University, Michael Crow, and then the dean of the College of Arts and Sciences, College of Liberal Arts and Sciences, the largest part of Arizona State University. And it covers all the natural sciences, social sciences, humanities departments. And it's larger than many state universities in of itself, because ASU is the largest university in the country. So those two people, Michael Crow had been the president for well over a decade at ASU and had made his brand, his mark at ASU and in higher education on innovation. And it sounds like just a buzzword, but the particular brand of innovation he wanted to bring was to restore the public civic mission of a great public university. And the backstory there is it's a great American story. He was the first in his family to attend university or college and went on to get a PhD at a state university, Iowa, and then went on to get a PhD at Syracuse University and then went on to the Ivy Leagues. He earned his academic career, his tenure at Columbia University, and rose to be the executive provost. Then he's recruited to be the president of ASU. And it's an interesting story. Having risen, we would say, most of us in higher education would say, risen from public university to elite private university, why would you go back to public university? Mm-hmm. And especially in the culture of American higher education, why would you go back to state university, right? I mean, that's not like University of Arizona. Right. University of Arizona, okay, right. But state, why would you leave Columbia University to go back to state? It's because he had this biography in his own personal experience of realizing what an extraordinary experience college university education was, felt badly that other members of his family, especially a brother that he talks about, didn't have this opportunity. So he seized the opportunity to make Arizona State University a great research university, Carnegie Air one, but also to restore the public mission, which is to say, what is the university's teaching and research doing for the local community in the Phoenix area, for Arizona, for the United States of America, for America's responsibilities in a very globalized world? What have we done lately for our communities, right? It's a, you can still do the excellent research and be Carnegie Air One and have all the prizes and federal grants, right? So in a way, the legislature and the governor put him on the spot. Do you really mean this, President Kerr? I mean, nobody said this explicitly, but that's what it turns out to be. You really mean this about, you know, the new ASU charter you've established, prioritizing the right balance between excellence in research and caring for your local communities? And so he immediately said, I was up at the Air Force Academy when this happened. He immediately said, okay, we'll do this. We should be doing more of this teaching and research in civic thought, economic thought, leadership. Then the second person, I'll be briefer here, is the dean who was handed this football, the dean of the College of Arts and Science, turns out to be the former chair of the Political Science Department, and then dean of social sciences, and then dean of the college. He taught American politics, and it was his career. And so he immediately understood the need for more of it. And in fact, when the criticism arose, and this has happened in all the other seven states, the other public university campuses, the existing faculty in arts and sciences, you know, history, political science, others, oh, we already do this. This is political, and we could prove it because we already do this. Well, that the Dean Kenny at Arizona State University explicitly said, I was in the meetings when he did this, he explicitly said to his colleagues in arts and sciences, you know, we don't do this as much as we used to. You know that political science has shifted away from teaching American constitutional and civic thought and teaching American political history in the ways that used to be traditional in these disciplines. You know, we have let go when these older professors retired, we gave those tenure lines to other areas of those disciplines, right? You know that. So those two people get great credit for saying, we will actually do this. And then just one other piece of the story. They knew it was politically controversial. They knew their own faculty was worried about it. So the president, the provost, and the dean established an academic advisory board of distinguished scholars from Stanford, Harvard, and Notre Dame in the middle of the country. And they were indisputably expert professors in political thought, in economic thought, in American constitutional thought. They sketched out a mission statement, the outlines of a curriculum, and that's the point at which I was contacted. So that advisory board and their mission statement, which was written by Harvey Mansfield of Harvard University, that helped to say, this is academically serious. We were given a mandate and funding from the state legislature. Here are top scholars from prestigious universities around the country saying, this ought to be done. Here's a general outline roadmap for how it should be done.
Yeah, well, having Harvey Mansfield write your mission statement is kind of getting a heavy hitter. And of course, the Republicans in the legislature would respect him as well.
That's right. Yeah, it settled. For some people in the university, it was a further sign, oh, this is all, you know, a conservative Republican plot, because Mansfield's candid about the need for faculty in great universities to be conservatives as well as left progressives, and to be open about their political views while also showing they're first and foremost academics. They're not being partisan warriors. So if some people took the Harvey Mansfield sign as proof, oh, this is ideological, but more serious and sober people who would bother to read that mission statement said, oh, this is very serious. Right? This is a call for a liberal art, a classical liberal arts education blended with an American civic education to prepare leaders.
Yeah. Is Michael Crow still the president there?
He is still the president.
Yeah. Well, you know, because I want to make sure I had the right guy, because he is indisputably one of the most entrepreneurial college presidents in America, bar none. I mean, what he's done to turn ASU into a powerhouse in so many domains. I mean, why are all those chip factories going to Phoenix? It's because he's churning out the graduates who are going to staff them. So someone like that clearly has the savvy to understand that, man, maybe I should make the legislature like me, you know? it's like,
yeah.
And
there's a great point there. And I'll just add to it that of, you know, as I mentioned, I've been a professor now over 30 years. He's the most patriotic and pro-American of any major American university leader I can think of. There may be some as patriotic and pro-American, but he used the word you just used, entrepreneurialism. He uses that word.
Yeah.
He uses the phrase American exceptionalism. Mm-hmm. And I've seen him do it with a range of audiences, not just in front of, you know, donors who might be more conservative and he wants to throw them a bone, right? He does it with his own deans and provosts and department heads. Talks about American entrepreneurialism and American exceptionalism, and that we need to understand, you know, regarding Skettle, we need to provide a civic education grounded in our founding principles and founding documents. I mean, unbelievable compared to the vast majority of universities and colleges, public and private, in American higher education. So he is an exceptional person. Mm-hmm.
So what are some of the specific things that you do at Skettle?
I wrote a report at AEI's request, American Enterprise Institute, in early 2023. I used a phrase from Lincoln, right? A new birth of freedom, a new birth of freedom in American higher education. And that helped me to spell out what we'd already articulated in the school, three main missions. First, provide an excellent undergraduate education, and we also have a master's degree. Provide an excellent set of degrees that blend classical liberal arts education and American civic education. For the undergraduate track, the undergraduate degree, a minor, we have a certificate in PPE, philosophy, politics, economics. That lays the foundation for thinking about being a citizen in the full sense of citizen in American civil society, private sector, or public sector. Okay. So that's mission one, what an excellent academic department would do. And in this field that I call now generally civic thought and leadership. Second mission, show a broader community and provide to a broader community the Socratic discourse and debate you're having in your classrooms. This is what a classical liberal arts education should do. This is what an American civic education should do. Tocqueville, when he visits in the 1830s, says the Americans have a new world kind of patriotism that he calls a reflective patriotism. Could be translated a considered patriotism, right? The Americans love America, grateful for America, proud of it. But they want to argue because America is about ideas. It's founded on ideas. The Americans, he says, want to argue with each other. They want to argue with the government. So that's a perfect fit for a higher civics in American higher education, classical liberal education, American civic education. So the second mission is to show that to a broader public, to allow your students, your faculty, staff at the university to be part of a speaker series, for example, or other special speaker events or other discourse events, right? But especially to show it to the local community, the state, nationally, that we are about discourse and high-level debate and argument. Free people, reasonable people disagree. So we call our speaker series the Civic Discourse Project. And you attended a conference that we had, our annual conference in the Civic Discourse Project. So that's mission number two, right? First mission, excellent academic department. Second mission, public speakers and other efforts to show discourse, reasonable civil disagreement. Third mission, K-12 civic education. Third mission is that PhD faculty in these departments of civic thought leadership must care about civic and history education in their local K-12 schools. It's a duty of a public university. And what's happened in the past 50, 75 years is that that's been pushed off just to the teachers' colleges or the ed schools. They have become monocultures of left and far left thinking, and they don't do civic and history education very well at all. So really nobody in the higher education public university space is caring about K-12 public schools. And a primary mission of the K-12 public schools, when Horace Mann starts the Common School movement in the 19th century, it's about educating citizens for the Republic, right? But now nobody in the public university space is really caring about K-12 civics education the way they should. So that's the third mission, those three missions. And the third one is probably jarring to most history, political science, economics, philosophy PhDs, that we should care about K-12.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, you know, as you note, I was invited to come give a talk at your annual conference. And the first thing I did when I got that invitation was like, you do know who I am, don't you? I'm not expecting academic people to invite me to give a talk on anything. First off, I'm not an academic, so I appreciate your generosity in including me in your event. Yeah. And then
that makes a point. Can I just stop it? That makes a point, Aaron. So the conference you were at was typical, we think, of what we have tried to do, that annual conference. The two regular keynote speakers were a center-left expert and a center-right expert. So Danielle Allen of Harvard University, leading scholar from the center-left, more egalitarian point of view about American political thought and political philosophy. And then Yuval Levin of the American Enterprise Institute. We know he's coming out with a book on the American Constitution and the deeper meaning and purposes and uses of the American Constitution. So here's a great pairing, right? To have Danielle Allen from the center left, Yuval Levin from the center right, and then a range of speakers, right? You were we knew who you were, right? coming from the center right. But that's what we want for enriching our own students, our own faculty, and students and faculty at the university. We want that kind of high level discourse, and we want to provide that to the local Arizona community. And then for our Civic Discourse Project, Arizona PBS. You saw there in the room, right? Arizona PBS for 7 years has been our partner in this. They give very high level, high quality recording of video recording of all of our speaker events. Then they have an archive. They rebroadcast it on the local channel. And we have a YouTube a channel, and all of our archived events are on our own webpage as well. So your experience, right? Yeah. That's precisely the point.
Yeah, I mean, it was a great event. And, you know, that's really how I learned about Skettle. And, you know, I had vague, sort of peripherally heard about one of your imitators, which was, I think it's called the Hamilton Institute.
That's right.
At the University of Florida. But I didn't really know what it was. And I wasn't really paying any attention to it. I just happened to know one gentleman who was recruited there. Yes. And it was really great to get a sense of what's happening. How many students do you have a degree, who are pursuing a degree in your
school? Right. We have grown from nothing because everything had to be built from scratch. Fall of 2017 was our first semester. So we teach a fairly large number of students. We have a relatively smaller number of majors, and we're trying to sort through that because it's really an honor to pick a degree. You're going to go tell mom and dad or whoever. My undergraduate degree, bachelor's degree, is in civic and economic thought and leadership, right? Or I have a certificate in PPE, philosophy, politics, economics, or have a minor in that, right? It's really an honors kind of degree. A young man or woman, a family, confident enough to invest in a liberal arts education, an American civic education that doesn't point directly to a job path. A career path. It can point to our graduates go off to law school or journalism, or you know, the NGO or think tank world or other kinds of graduate study. They go off to a range, they're doing a range of things. And we have students from the left, right, and center. So that's a more typical elite liberal arts college or liberal arts spirit in a university. And it's unusual for Arizona State University, which is a great state university, but most, you know, a huge number of the students, proportion of students, are first generation college university students, and a very large number of Hispanic or Latino students. So it's a reach for them to say, well, I'm gonna invest in my life and my future prospects, not really knowing the precise path and the precise job prospects out of here. So the brief answer is we have about somewhere between 60 and 70 majors and 60 and 70 minors, and then a smaller number, like about 30 students who are in that certificate program, PPE, philosophy, politics, economics, which is very small for ASU, massive university. But we teach, this year we'll teach close to 2,000 students across all of our courses. And this is, I hope, a model for all the other states out there and the 12 other public university campuses. Once we existed with the word civic at the beginning of our big long title, the State Board of Regents got very interested and got motivated. And they rewrote their guidelines for the general studies or general education requirements for the three public universities in the state. And it was controversial with the three state universities, and it's taken several years to actually push it through. But it's now in effect, and the new guidelines require explicitly a course or courses in American institutions. That's the title they gave to it, because they knew, partly because we were around, sort of local experts, they knew that if universities, colleges were teaching at all about citizenship preparation, American civics, it was about engagement and participation. And that drifted or marched very strongly to the left, right? So the regents was, and they were Democrats as well as Republicans on the Board of Regents. They explicitly chose American institutions to emphasize the first priority is American constitutional civic knowledge, then preparation for participation in engagement. So that's a wonderful story. There now is a requirement for all ASU students. It's gonna roll in every new freshman first year class the next 4 years. They must take a 3-credit course. We're not the only department that teaches it, but I was on the provost committee that wrote the guidelines, sort of translating the guidance from the regents. It's very specific. It's more like the math requirements in general studies or the English, right? So instead of the, you know, many colleges and universities, okay, there's a humanities requirement, and any of the following 100 or 200 or 300 courses will meet the humanities requirement. It's useless, right? Or worse than useless. So here, right now, in the first year of implementing at ASU, only 10 courses have been approved for a massive university to meet this general studies requirement. So our enrollment has grown to almost 2,000 students. We think it's going to grow further. And then when we get those students in for our course on American constitutional thought and constitutional debates, then we hope to keep some of them.
Right. Well, I mean, it seems like in line with your mission, having a lot of people come through your program who don't pursue degree is part of, you know, this broader civic purpose.
Excellent point. Exactly right. Yeah.
Kind of the last question that I have is about the many other institutes that you've inspired across the country. What is going on with this movement around civics in universities, and where do you see it going?
Thank you for that. I first want to mention that there is a private university dimension to this as well. And this makes a point that I've tried to make in my journal article I just published and some public writings, that this is not an ideological conservative Republican partisan movement. This is not a culture war movement. So to go back a step, we're established in 2016. We're building during 2017. In 2020, rather amazingly, the former president of Harvard, Derek Bok, publishes a book, well known as a leader in American higher education. And it's called Higher Expectations. And the subtitle is about what 21st century American higher education needs to do. The first deficit, I'm being less diplomatic than he was. The first deficit he identifies is the lack of an American civic education at most colleges and universities, public or private. That's his first topic. Wonderful chapter on it. Then a year later, the president of Johns Hopkins University, named Ronald Daniels, and two co-authors, they publish a book with the title, What Universities Owe Democracy. This is astounding because Johns Hopkins is the first research university established in the United States, 1876, very much on the German model of a new kind of education needed, research. If we're educating leaders at all, it's to educate them in these new disciplines and new modes of thinking needed for the modern state, the modern liberal democracy, whatever it might be, right? And implicitly, what they're criticizing is the old liberal arts approach. And here, Ron Daniels, the president of Johns Hopkins, is saying, well, 150 years later, an unintended consequence in American higher education of this new research university model is that we killed off the civic education component that was always a very strong presence in that old liberal arts model of education, colleges then to universities. And everything we've done, says Daniels and his co-authors, to try and fix that, it doesn't work. Great books programs, but they only are a few colleges or universities that have great books programs, and most of them are elective or voluntary and other things, especially the emphasis on engagement and participation and things like that doesn't work at all. You need civic constitutional knowledge about American constitutional democratic republic, right? This is just astounding that the president of Johns Hopkins is writing this book. So he calls for a required course or courses in American, he uses the phrase democracy education more than I would, but he's got the right point. So those are two leading center-left voices in the, and they neither of them mention our school, Skettle at ASU, or the others that are just starting, the other departments just starting. But they provide independent testimony from the center left that this is a real thing. Mm-hmm. A deficit in educational terms and a deficit in the sort of civic duty that higher education owes to America. So then just two last points. Stanford University, to their credit, their political science department and some faculty from other parts of the university formed the Stanford Civics Initiative in this period right after we were established. And again, they don't refer to us. They're a little bit, there's a little backstory. There's a little influence that we have on it, but not much. And they now have moved forward in 5 years so that every Stanford student coming in, every first year student starting this coming fall, will be required to take in their first year a course called Citizenship in the 21st Century. It's not quite the course that I would prepare or I think you would prepare. It uses the word democracy a bit too much, you know. It's got a little bit too much on current topics and controversies. Not enough on the Constitution and civic constitutional principles. But it's
too much about our democracy.
Yeah, right. But it's something, and it does have a declaration in there, and this is a reference. I mean, students would know the Constitution exists, you know, and some other things like that. So, and then one other point, at Johns Hopkins, President Daniels has followed through. It's very difficult when you're university president. You're only the president. You don't control the curriculum. Right? The faculty control the curriculum. So, but he's worked slowly but steadily. And that train is pretty far down the tracks. There, I suspect in the next 2 years, the new entering class at Johns Hopkins will have a democracy education requirement. Again, not exactly what I would want, but it's better than nothing. And going to be, I think, probably, you know, decently good. And it's a start. Right. So now to answer your direct question, what has happened across 7 years? As I mentioned, 7 other states, 12 other public university campuses. I'll mention just the prominent ones. You already mentioned the Hamilton Center for Classical and Civic Education at University of Florida, Gainesville. It's called a center, but it's really a department. And it's been authorized by the state legislature and governor to be a college. So I think within a year or two, it will be the Hamilton College of Classical and Civic Education with a dean. UT Austin, University of Texas Austin, had a smaller entity to start, the Civitas Institute, but then the state legislature, the Board of Regents and trustees, state legislature and governor established the School of Civic Leadership, by which they meant a college. And they've just named their permanent dean, Justin Dyer, as the first dean of the School of Civic Leadership. Their undergraduate degree is going to be called, I think, something like American Civics. Right. So that's a leading public Ivy. Right. And University of Florida, Gainesville, you know, prestigious university of a state. The third one I'll mention two more. Third one is at UNC Chapel Hill, which I mentioned a little bit earlier, the first public university in the country, recovering and restoring the civic mandate and mission it was given 250 years ago almost, right? So they have established a sort of school there. It's kind of a department, it's kind of a college, but it's the School of Civic Life and Leadership. And they've named their first director dean, who is a classics professor coming from Duke University to take up the dean director position there. Then Ohio State is building the Salmon Chase Center for Civic and Constitutional Studies, something like that. University of Tennessee, Knoxville has the Institute of American Civics. So they have different names. They have slightly different emphases. Some are departments. A few are colleges. Some have state centers, but they're kind of super centers because they have direct funding from the state, and they often report to a dean or a provost. Mm-hmm. And the landscape that I and a few others, the colleagues at the American Enterprise Institute, Ben and Jenna Story, we've been debating and talking about this. Peter Berkowitz, Hoover Institution at Stanford, Justin Dyer, the dean at UT Austin. We've been writing about this, talking about it, meeting. Is this field called civic thought? Is it called civic thought and leadership? Is it called American civics? As an academic field in higher education that should have its own undergraduate degrees, maybe, and we have a master's degree in classical liberal education and leadership, especially for schooling, school teachers thinking about civics and social studies and history teaching. So they should have undergraduate degrees. They should have a master's degree. Should they have a PhD? Having a PhD means your field, right? So We're debating and talking about this. So it's a great American story. It's messy. It's plural. It's federalism. It's inchoate right now, and doing what free people do: disagreeing, debating, talking with each other. But I do think it's a movement now. And the next challenge I think we have is to show we are not. We know, the deans, directors, faculty, we know we're not a partisan culture war movement. We know we're a serious academic higher education movement and field. And people of goodwill in the center and center left know that and say that about us. We still have some critics. But the challenge is to really spread that message. And it would be great to have some purple states, state legislatures, clearly purple or even bluish purple, to say, you know what, we didn't think of it, but, and the state legislatures do this all the time, right? It's a federalism model of experimentation. We didn't think of it, but this is actually a good idea. And we're going to do it our own way, tweak it in this direction or that direction. So that in the next 5 years, that would be that. That's something that, in fact, I'm working on and others are working on to spread the model. And then in parallel, what's happening at private universities and colleges, and for the two communities to say, we're already starting to do this. And I should give credit to the Hoover Institution at Stanford University. They have a new center for the Center for Revitalizing American Institutions is the new center that they have. And they've pulled together private and public university people and center left to center right leaders in this space. And I think they'll do more of that.
Well, that's great. And it's, I think, a positive movement in the whole in higher education, which is a popular punching bag, I think, with almost everybody right now. Trust in higher ed is way down.
Yes.
And we're so used to America talking about all the bad news all the time. So it's important to highlight the good news, that it isn't all just bad news. Good things are happening. And again, thank you so much for not just being here today, but for also inviting me to your conference, which was a wonderful experience to be out there and get to visit ASU for the first time. So Dr. Kreese, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for a great conversation, and best wishes with your work.